We speak wisdom among them that are perfect, yet not the wisdom of this world, but we speak the wisdom of God in a mystery, even the hidden wisdom which God ordained before the world unto our glory. Eye hath not seen, nor ear heard, neither have entered into the heart of men the things which God hath prepared for them that love him. But God hath revealed them unto us by his Spirit. For the Spirit searcheth all things, yea, the deep things of God. Now we have received not the Spirit of the world, but the Spirit which is of God, that we might know the things that are freely given to us of God. The natural man receiveth not the things of the Spirit of God, for they are foolishness unto him. Neither can he know them, because they are spiritually discerned. But he that is spiritual discerneth all things, yet he himself is discerned of no man. From the second chapter of the first epistle of St. Paul the Apostle to the Corinthians. Jesus said unto the people, When ye see a cloud rise out of the west, straightway ye say, There cometh a shower, and so it is. And when ye see the south wind blow, ye say, There will be heat, and it cometh to pass. Ye can discern the face of the sky and of the earth, but how is it that ye cannot discern this time? Yea, and why even of yourselves judge ye not what is right? Seek not ye what ye shall eat, or what ye shall drink? For all these things do the nations of the world seek after. Rather, seek ye the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you. Fear not, little flock, for it is your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. From the 12th chapter of the Gospel according to St. Luke. Well, hello. So the last few times I've done one of these things, I've done them in the church as part of talking to people in the church. I'm not doing that this time. So I just wanted to let you know that that's why it doesn't sound like it's in a church. this week, we have an intent of going into and exploring and manifesting discernment. It's the week of the 11th Sunday after Trinity, and that's normally what we do, is we look at the intent of discernment in this particular week. And you can hear from the readings that I just read to you that clearly it is something to do with discernment because of those readings. The reading from Paul and the reading from Luke. From Corinthians and Luke, I should say. So what is discernment? One of my friends once told me that it was, how did he put it? That's easy. It's seeing with your heart. Maybe it is. Maybe it is seeing with your heart. What does that mean, seeing with your heart? How would you know that that was discernment if it was seeing with your heart? So, surely, if discernment matters, then the very first place we need discernment is with discernment itself. So, just like in what the Pali Buddhist texts call samadhi, which is translated as right view or complete view, discernment has to do with perceiving correctly. But unlike in Buddhist texts, it also has to do with judging correctly, specifically right from wrong, and so discovering the true value or quality of something. Then how might we learn discernment? Perhaps one ought not to even try, since discernment implies judgment, and judgment is mine, saith the Lord, judge not, let ye be judged. And shouldn't one cast the beam out of one's own eye first, that you may clearly see the speck in your brother's eye? So saith the Lord, after all. Well, that is obviously what discernment must be about then, casting the speck out of your own eye. A friend of mine owned and ran a restaurant. One time a customer came in, and halfway through the meal, my friend's staff didn't like to serve that table as the people in it were making trouble. In restaurants, sometimes there are people who order something which they then pretend they didn't order or want, even though they've eaten most of it, but they still want it subtracted from the bill. In other words, they're trying to play the restaurant. So at this table, a young woman was doing her best to claim the wait staff had given her the wrong order. And sometimes that is possible. Not every wait person has perfect English, so you never know. But in this case, despite the waitress being Asian, English was her native tongue. Yet the customer was determined. So in this situation, what did my friend do? What would you do when faced with an unhappy, troublesome customer? Because to deal with or manage this situation effectively, one must have discernment. Indeed, one can make bad choices easily without discernment. I remember a difficult school where I taught maths for a year. That's quite some time ago now. And it had an acting maths head of department who was a bit sensitive about her acting status, though she did have a tendency to give herself and her second in charge of the better classes, her 2YC, the better classes, avoiding the difficult students, to the point where she also didn't really provide disciplinary support. In fact, it's experiences like teaching at this particular school that mean that I no longer teach. At least not maths, anyway. Her decisions were aimed at making things easier for herself. And anyway, about halfway through the year, one staff member went on maternity leave and someone new was coming. So our departmental head noticed that this new person, this new guy, had the same last name as the author of an upper school textbook. I think it was calculus. And in a staff meeting prior to his arrival, she wondered if it could be the same person, but quickly dismissed that, saying she doubted it because we never got anyone good, and chuckled wryly because it was such a funny joke, I guess. What a very curious thing to say to your staff. Anyway, when he came, she asked the question, had he written the textbook? He seemed puzzled and denied it. She said, but you have the same last name as the writer. And it was a pretty unusual name, last name. It was Greek. And she showed him the book and he said, oh, yeah, my cousin wrote that. And apparently that satisfied her. To be discerning requires a special kind of attention, and it's not attention to others or even your own faults. You don't discover the truth about other people, yourself, or even the world by concentrating on anyone's faults, not even your own. All that will do is make you unable to respect yourself, and if you can't respect yourself, how can you ever respect others? Looking for faults in yourself so that you can correct them leads rather quickly to you becoming contemptuous of others. Like the believer in scientism, the scientific materialist, such a person believes that they have killed out all superstition and bolsters their materialism by an appeal to science. as if the scientific method in some way assures the materialist belief and the atheism that goes with it. Yet materialists are like the citizens of a city whose water came only in pipes. Imagine a city full of people who had never seen a large body of water, never swum in water, and never seen fishes, dolphins, or whales, isolated from the reality of oceans and seas and lakes and rivers. Hard to picture? Maybe. But imagine such a place were to exist in some science fiction future. Having no experience of large bodies of water, these citizens are convinced nothing bigger than microbes lives in water. Having never swum, are convinced that humans cannot swim or float. And even though they know water is essential to life, don't realize just how essential, or the fact that complex life originated in water. We can take this further. Imagine one open-minded citizen discovered some old books or had some other experience, perhaps a family story, that made him think perhaps humans could float or even swim if there was enough water. Of course, he wouldn't have had those words, but he may have come across them in the story. He may have come across the idea that sea life existed, and perhaps life even originated in water. And being so open-minded and curious, he did his best to experiment with whatever water he could safely contain himself, discovering that humans could definitely float and possibly even move in water, that is, swim. How do you think the other citizens see that experimentalist? Do you think they would recognize his open-mindedness, praise his courage, or laud his genius? Or do you think they would ridicule, deride, and even punish him? It's a funny thing, isn't it? Those who have put their minds into the possibility of the spiritual realms and attempted to discover whether they exist and what their characteristics are often not recognized even by others who claim a spiritual interest. Yet that is the beginning of discernment. Today's epistle guides us towards spiritual wisdom from Paul and contrasts things spiritual with the things of this world. And the gospel tells us not to worry about the things of this world, which we already know immediately and well, and also not to worry on the things of the kingdom, but rather to seek the kingdom of God and his righteousness. And this is the method for approaching things spiritual, and hence the method for learning discernment. And when the new maths teacher told the acting head of department it was his cousin's textbook, I watched her estimation of him drop instantly, and she proceeded to treat him as she did the rest of us. No good people. But he and I became friends. And of course, he got around to telling me that he did write that textbook after all, something which for a number of reasons I had already guessed. Anyway, he made sure he left that school the following year, and the head of department lost an excellent resource, never knowing she had had it. And where was I? Yes, my restaurateur friend with the customer who wanted the bill reduced. So my restaurant owner, she had a way of being interested in who the customer was and what she would do next. My friend had no particular expectation or judgment of the customer, despite knowing the customer was attempting to cheat her. So she just listened and talked to the customer in this interested way, with this special kind of intensely committed attention, which both unsettled but somehow calmed the customer down, if you can understand what I mean by that. Imagine that you're trying to cheat somebody and they are just intensely interested in what you have to say. Perhaps you can get an idea of what I'm talking about. My friend offered another dish, but would not change the bill. Well, it turned out the customer didn't want another dish. In fact, the customer ended up paying the unchanged bill but had somehow corrected herself in that interaction because she later became a happy regular customer. So what happened there? Discernment is really a kind of learning, like the learning of things of the world, but instead the learning of things spiritual without knowing what that is. Consider this miracle. You learned language from having no language. Once upon a time, so long ago that you can scarcely remember, you learned to understand what was being said to you and around you without any idea of how to do it, with just a special attention. Spiritual discernment is similar. You and I are without any idea of how to approach the kingdom. And just like infants in the world, we are without any foundation to work from. But we can put our minds into the spiritual world, the kingdom of God and his righteousness, not knowing what it is, not believing in any particular thing about it, but trusting enough it does exist to be able to discover what it is. Our culture teaches us to look for what is wrong and what is bad. To approach the kingdom, you have to look for what is right and what is good. That is the main point to remission of sin. A person concerned with sin is like a wealthy man weighed down with the cares and worries of this world. Lightness is an aspect of the kingdom. How can you fly if you are not light? One cannot be heavy in the kingdom, or one cannot fly. There is a reason the old gods and the angels are all depicted with wings. And so I'd like to finish this little talk, if I may, with something that really expresses the kind of attention that we need to have from one of the early Christian writers. And it's one of the Odes of Solomon, the first Ode of Solomon, or sometimes called the 34th Ode of Solomon, translated from the Coptic in this case. The Lord is upon my head like a crown, and I shall not be without him. The crown of truth was woven for me, and it causes thy branches to bud in me. For it is not like a withered crown that buddeth not, but thou livest upon my head, and thou hast blossomed upon my head. Thy fruits are full grown and perfect, they are full of thy salvation.